Welcome to the Deer Society Podcast. Here's your host, Brian Lemke.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Deer Society Podcast. I'm Brian Lemke, joined by Mike and JJ Dukehart, and today we are talking about the final push. Gun seasons are rolling out, we're getting into that late season period. Deer are starting to shift. We've had some big weather shifts here just today and over the last week or so, and we're going to see if those deer make that shift. But talking about the final push, talking about taking some chances, you know, what are those best food plots, food areas to be hunting right now, and what do those look like? Is it greens? Is it beans? Is it corn? Is it browse? You know, what is that strategy in this final push here? So I'll kick it off to you guys. You guys have been doing some hunting here recently. We had a big weather change today, which we'll get into later. But the weather has been a little warmer seasonality wise. So you guys have been out hunting. What have you been seeing?
Yeah, for the most part, we've been seeing deer hit a lot of the different food sources because there's not that big, deep, you know, snow cover right now on a lot of the food. So they're still hitting the greens. We're watching all kinds of different fields. I've been seeing them in cut beans to standing beans to, you know, even clover, alfalfa, and some of our secret food plot mixes, you know, the turnips and whatnot, brassicas. So they're kind of hitting everything from what I've seen. And, you know, we're just kind of bouncing around trying to play, you know, when it warms up, we're experimenting with, you know, should we hit the green food sources? That seemed to be a good tactic here the last few weeks. And then when it gets real cold, those beans, we had some standing beans and they're just hammering them, you know, seeing up to 30, 40 deer at night in those fields, 40, 50 turkeys. So just, you know, that herd, that late season herd buildup is starting to happen. Seeing bucks back together and in kind of bachelor groups, I guess you'd call them. I think one night I saw 5 bucks come in at the end there, kind of all together. So, and I think yesterday was, or 2 days ago, you saw a group of 4 bucks together. So starting to herd back up. And, yeah, now that we have some snow, like you mentioned there, we got some snow falling right now as we're talking, 4 or 5 inches. So I think that's going to really shift what food sources are preferred. And then maybe we can dive into what we feel like is going to be good the next couple weeks. But what have you been seeing?
Yeah.
A nice shirt, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, this is the most popular shirt that I think we sell. So
I'm going to tell you,
understandable.
You guys that watch this podcast, like, you'll notice it again, common theme here. I'm always the odd guy out coming here. Mike and JJ got it lined up. I'm like, you got to be planning this. Like, I think they're just pulling the shade over my eyes, and they call each other before the podcast. Like, look, this is what we're going to wear. We're going to make Lemke look dumb again. So,
Hey, I got to admit though, when I'm watching the podcast, cause I check them out, you know, your hat looks, I mean, that hat is a good hat.
That one sold out first.
That is a good hat. I don't even have one of those, but I'd get it so dirty I'd only wear it once. But
yeah, this is probably my official favorite. Like, of all the Deer Study hats, this one's right up there, I think, at the top.
It's a great hat. Anyway, so besides getting your Christmas gifts, what I've been seeing is, and this, you know, this is a really good point, Jay, that you made. It's about snow depth here, which is a kind of a weird dynamic because you don't see that all across the country, you know? So if you get down a little bit below that snow line, which is what, somewhere in Missouri, somewhere, I would think, southern Missouri, they don't have deeper snow for long, you know, periods of time with that kind of cold that holds it. I mean, they'll get the snow, but it'll melt, you know? We're here, we're probably not going to lose this snow for the rest of the year now. We had about a 2-3 incher before. It got unseasonably warm for us. That would be, you know, up into the 30s into melting temperature, the 40s, which really kicks back down into the teens at night in the 20s. So it holds the snow, but it also melts it during the day. But it's really about snow depth for us. So what I noticed was exactly what JJ said. We were out the other day, and we had a little bit of that first kind of coldish snap, and there was 30 deer in that field and like 56 turkeys. And we were surrounded by deer. It was a craziest hunt. I thought, you know, you get those feelings that it's going to happen today. And I just had that feeling. And we got in there, and I'm still kind of, you know, wondering why that deer didn't show up. you know, and the thing of it is he did show up right at night, right after he left, about what, 45 minutes to an hour later. So he showed up on one of the cameras, but I thought for sure it was a done deal that day. But we had deer 15 yards from the blind, deer behind the blind, nothing was blowing, nothing was freaking out. I'm sure we bumped a few on our way out, but it was just a fantastic hunt. So late season hunting can be very exciting and a whole lot of action going on. So then 2 days later, I go out into the other field. It was a green field versus the beans was the one with all the volume. So I go into the green field that's connected to corn, and I see three generations of bucks out there all at the same time. So I got two button bucks out there bumping heads. I got 2 year and a half olds wandering around, kind of checking out the does. Excuse me. And then I have 2 2-and-a-half-year olds that are kind of being buddies, but yet, you know, they're tolerating each other, but yet they're sparring. So, and they got to a little bit of aggressive pushing, you know, kind of a pecking order deal, but they weren't fighting over does or anything like that. So there's 6 bucks there, you know, and that's pretty much post gun season. We got muzzle loaders here for a few more days, and then we're going to totally change our tactics. But right now, just seeing volumes of deer, they're still using the green plot as a transition to the corn in this particular spot, and they'll feed in there for less time, but they do use it a little bit, and they're still grabbing a couple of turnips or radishes or whatever off the top when they can get to the bulbs, and you know, they're grazing it a little bit, and then they just cruise through and head to, you know, check the rope, and then they head into the corn. And turkeys are with them all the time right now here.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, it's interesting that what I've kind of seen the last week or so, and I spent some time down in Iowa for their shotgun season, and, you know, it was warm down there too, and the deer were moving, but the deer were moving in random places. Like, we didn't have the weather to drive them to beans. They were still coming out there and some standing corn, stuff like that, but like, you'd drive around in the morning if we didn't hunt, or, you know, like, even, you know, other people driving around in the evening, seeing them, like, just out in random spots, grazing, you know, on the, even in these plowed fields and browsing. We had a big buck the one night. We were sitting over a big standing cornfield, and I caught a glimpse of a big buck up in the woods, and that deer stayed up in the woods, and he was up an hour before dark, for sure, with a bunch of other deer. And there was no rush to get down to that corn at all. It was, they were super content staying there in the woods, browsing. You know, there's no snow on the ground down there, warm temperatures. Like, they were, I'm not saying they weren't moving, but they were just moving in, you know, kind of convenient spots and kind of randomly, to be honest with you, that there was nothing, no driving force to say, okay, those deer, they got to go and they got to feed on high protein or high carbs. Like, there was nothing that made them move to those spots.
Yeah, and even when I was doing a lot of filming last week, you know, we're sitting over all these different food sources, kind of a big experiment this year we got going, probably testing, you know, across all the properties, 15 different blend or seed types and whatnot. And the deer kind of feed in here, but then all of a sudden, you know, they'll just kind of hit the edge, and then they'll find a tree, and they'll nibble on the tree a little bit, and then they go back in the woods and they eat some random weed. Yeah. Or even in the food plot, they'll find a couple weeds that came up tall, and, you know, they're in this lush food plot. It's not lush anymore because it's kind of frozen and eaten over, but, you know, this heavily filled food source, I should say, and then they go over and they find that weed, and they just take a little bite. So they're looking for a little bit of everything. That diversity is good. And you kind of just notice how they, I don't know what goes through their mind, like what they, why they crave certain things at certain times, but you can just see them kind of shifting, you know, week by week or day by day, even on just different brassicas. Like, they might go to from like some kale and rape 1 week when it's a little bit warmer, and then they go over, and then next couple of days they're hitting more turnips and things like that. So it's just interesting to see how they do mix it up. It's not like this consistent, like, until you get real late season where there's tons of snow, there's not as much food, everything's over browse, and there's only standing corn, standing beans around here, and then they just flock to that and eat heavy. But when the snow's lower and there's temps are mild, like, they're just out there browsing just anywhere, you know, just mixing it up. So it's hard to really pattern that until you get that big cold front.
So the other thing is they don't gorge themselves like we were seeing earlier either. So they would go into those green fields and they'd just be gorging themselves. You know, they'd be chowing like they're super hungry. And, you know, we can't see what's happening in a cornfield, but I'm sure they were hitting the corn too. And the beans, same thing now. They're going out into the beans and it's a browsing feed. They'll actually move through that 5-acre plot. Is it 3 or 5? How big is that?
Yeah, a few acres there.
So it's a few acres and they'll get in there and they'll start browsing on it and then they'll be gone. And then 20 minutes later, they filter back in a little bit. And then right at night, then when all the bigger group comes, then it seems like they're in there longer, but they don't feed in there for more than maybe 20 minutes. It's kind of weird. They're not eating a lot, I guess is what I'm getting at. And I noticed that the colder the weather gets when they're trying to survive, they got to wean down that metabolism. So they got to have less food. They shut that metabolism down, and that's something that they do for survival up here. You know what I mean? So that cold weather, when it gets super, super, super cold, they literally will sit there, and I've said this over and over if you've listened to me before, how they'll almost shut their body down and sit there for almost a day and not eat anything until that cold, super, super cold weather goes away. Then they'll get up and they'll, like JJ said, it'll be bigger herds hitting a bigger food source, trying to not necessarily raise that metabolism back up, but get that nutrition in so they can survive another big cold snap. Because they're burning all that fat they've been developing over this fall. And of course, the bucks burn it during the rut. So they got to be close to that food source. And it's just, it's a different time up here.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's exciting because, like, you look at the snow out there, and I don't know if everybody here is ready for winter. I don't know if anybody in Minnesota ever is. But the exciting thing about getting up this morning and seeing all that snow and feeling the cold temperatures is that really these next 2 or 3 weeks, you know, the final weeks of the season can be some of the best hunting I feel all year round. And it's because of all those things that we're talking about. That snow will drive them to these spots where we have, you know, standing beans, standing corn. So I think there's really high percentage to pattern a big buck. You know, if you get snow, if you get cold temps, at least here in southern Minnesota, you know, so it'll be interesting to see now, are we going to see that shift happen finally? You know, are deer going to start being more driven to these plots, be more patternable, start showing up? You know, and they'll do it before dark, you know, because they got to get up, they got to move. You know, I think that they feel comfortable doing it. You get a herd of 30 deer out there, mm-hmm. You know, a big buck can stand and watch that for, you know, just inside the woods for 10, 20 minutes and feel comfortable enough to come out there in the daylight. Interesting story, actually, that I just heard last week. And this is kind of off the food topic a little bit, but a buddy of mine down in Kansas, I had left some reveals down there. And he was hunting this big deer and he was there early. Well, he showed back up and he started to hunt him. And every time he was there, the deer wasn't. But every single day that he wasn't there, the deer was there. So he's like, man, something's going on. So he tried changing up his access. He was hunting it with a good wind. But like that deer, there was something that was tipping him off. He was to the point where like he was crawling in, and every time he went in there was a cubby of quail that would go out no matter which way he went in. He's like, you know, maybe it's that cubby of quail that's an alarm for that deer. Couldn't figure it out. Well, anyways, long story short, he goes in and he moves his stand. He didn't move the stand. He hung a new stand. And that stand was 50 yards off of where he had been sitting. And the first night that he did that, he had a little different perspective on where he thought that deer was coming from, visually wise. He said he watched that deer walk up to the edge, just 10 yards inside the woods, and he looked right at that stand. He said, and he stood there for 20 minutes looking at that stand that he had been sitting in. He said, and finally determined there was nobody sitting in there. And he walked in and he killed him. So interesting. And I know like Lance one of our properties here in Minnesota did that late season a couple years ago, kind of just shifted a little bit his stand location late with all these deer coming to a food source and made it successful. So I'm not saying that is a bulletproof move and go do that. But, you know, some of these out-of-the-box strategies, and I know you guys can talk about your strategy coming up once gun season ends, but some of these out-of-the-box, a little more aggressive strategies may come back into play, you know, because, look, we got a couple weeks left. Like, if you're going to shoot your shot, you might as well shoot it now because we're running out of time.
Well, it's so hard to plan early in the year, too, for the late season, like hanging stands in June for, you know, a December hunt, because you think, like, when we're trying to access some of these big plots, you know, it feels like you're just, every deer in the world can see you, especially and when there's white snow on the ground.
They kind of can, though.
Yeah, so if the elevation's not perfect and you don't have access through, like, a river or just, you know, a low area, like, every, just deer can see you so well, and it's hard to plan that. So I'm already thinking, like, next year, how are we going to replicate this but have better access? You know, maybe we create some more barricades and stuff. But yeah, like, this time of the year, tough to get in. I almost debating on, like, wearing a white suit instead of your dark suit.
Yeah, but then when you get up, though.
So there's
if you get elevated, yeah. But I mean, yeah, the debate's there, right? You know, it's a good thought process.
But yeah, as we move forward, so this past couple of weeks, all the deer, you know, even we were talking to Brian Clary before the podcast here, he said, you know, all these deer were going out into the pastures, the horse pastures, cattle pastures, whatnot, eating all that grass. And we hunt some areas too that's just more pasture grass.
Yeah.
Those spots typically come December whenever there's a deep snow or just, you know, vacated by all the deer. There's no deer that even, because the effort that it takes to get through 6 inches, 12 inches, you know, foot and a half of snow to get a little bit of grass that's all shriveled up, it's not even really worth that return. So then that's when you really see that big shift into these ag fields too. So all the deer we've been seeing the past couple of days, even driving out of the shop here about half mile down the road, we've been seeing, you know, big groups of does on cut beans. I'm sure they're not going to be in those fields anymore either. So it's definitely going to be condensed coming up with this snow. It didn't hit everywhere, so not everybody can relate to this, but it definitely, you know, swiped through southeast Minnesota here and up into Wisconsin. So
and Iowa, northern Iowa.
Iowa got a little bit of it too.
Actually a little bit more than us, so.
Gotcha. So yeah, it's definitely going to shift. I don't think deer are going to be digging for clover too heavy. Or the alfalfa or the grasses. I mean, they do a little bit. You always see that one spot where the deer's kind of digging in the snow for that type of stuff. But you got the grain, that's where you got to be. Problem is there's so many deer that go there. So if you're trying to target one buck, 30, 40, even 10, 20 deer show up before that, you know, you got to figure out how you can get past all those other deer first to try to get your shot.
So. Yeah, and you know, This is the beauty of the sport, okay? I'm going to take this a different direction. People that watch the Deer Society and listen to what we're talking about and that kind of thing, you know, it's easy to have the misconception that we got so many deer and we see deer all the time and we kill big bucks all the time. And then you get on Facebook and everybody's killing a deer, these big giant deer, and it's like, how come I'm not killing no deer? How come I can't do it like I see it on the internet or on TV or whatever? You know, it just happens so easy for everybody. That's a visual misconception, or it's like trickery. Because if you understood the amount of time that we are putting in right now and the amount of time JJ, could you even begin to log the amount of hours that we put in our hunting and hunting strategy just this year alone?
No, because it's always in your mind.
It's always on your mind, but I mean, the actual hours you're putting in, I don't even know how to explain that. It's hundreds for sure. How many hundreds? I have no idea, but it's a lot of time that we put in the stand, prepping the stand, doing that stuff. And so, you see it in a glimpse in a 5 or 12 minute clip. That's an entire season. How many hours of footage is that, Brian? Do you go through to create that 12 minutes, that 15 minutes?
Couldn't even tell you. I mean, you watching something that's 12-15 minutes long. I mean, there's days and days and days of footage that captured to make that's
the stuff that's only aligning with and correlating with the actual subject of that hunt. That's not all the other footage that we're taking from all the other days of different deer, different scenario, different things happening. You don't even use that.
Yeah.
Different weather conditions. So I guess my point is that's the beauty of the sport. You know, embrace these experiences that you're getting. Like the other day I was out there and saw those three generations of bucks. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I knew one of my shooters could have come walking through there randomly at any time. They didn't, but it didn't bother me when I was done. It was such a great day. And then the day that we were out there just the other day when we had 30 some deer, you know, and a bunch of immature bucks, ones that we wouldn't shoot. A lot of people will shoot those deer. These are successful hunts for us. We're getting good footage. We're getting good stock shots. These are successful experiences. And if I don't fill a tag this year, I had a great year. So just because I'm seeing everybody on Facebook, maybe I see, let's say I see 100 or 500 or whatever deer people shot and look. There's millions of hunters out there, people. So you're seeing 50, 100, 200 deer. That's a low percentage. So don't be hard on yourself. Don't get frustrated. Embrace this sport for what it is. And for us, it's about continually, and it won't ever end, we're continually changing things with the land for our strategies. We're talking about that right now. How do we get in and out of these stands? We're trying to get it figured out. How can we get some stands put in the right place for the right weather conditions? You don't think about that when it's June and July and you're sweating and you're putting stuff out. You don't think about the forest is the foliage is gone and that your dominant winds start to become north, northwest, northeast. It's like, well, the food that I got for that particular, the deer want to go to, isn't in the right spot. I can't get in there with that wind, but that's where that food is that they need. So that's a safe haven day for them. And they kind of figure that out too. So it's those strategies along with trying to create these huge corridors that you can get in and out of these stands, you know what I mean? So that the deer aren't seeing you like, you know, your buddy experienced. And I don't know, it's just never ending. It's always a strategy. It's always a game. And you're putting in probably, I don't know, how many hunts does it take to shoot a buck? JJ, it's different for him because he's just, I don't know what his deal is.
He's got that horseshoe.
It's a horseshoe, but it's also an instinct and a talent too. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's opportunity. You can't shoot a big deer if that big deer is not there. So think of all the work and the time that it takes to let a deer live 6 years to 8 years. That's a lot of seasons, people. That's a lot of seasons.
Well, it's and you hit the nail on the head. You know, it's about that experience and the chase and everything that goes into it. You know, that strategy, it's like you shoot a buck and that's great. And everybody's, you're always jacked up about shooting a buck. But then it's kind of bittersweet. Like, okay, got him. You know, like that strategy worked. Now it's like, okay, what do I do now? Like Minnesota, we get one buck tag, you know? So, you know, you go hunt somewhere else, but that strategy continues. It's like, okay, you're watching deer, you're, you know, trying to watch, you know, get your dad and Chris and you guys on a, but it's like, just as a hunter, like that experience, it's about that experience. Like it's not about killing a deer. Like that's great icing on the cake, but like, it's about that chase. And the other thing is, there's still a lot of luck involved in these things. Like you can, we talk about all these strategies and we're all still learning. Like if you're not learning every day from these deer, then you're going backwards, because like, as long as you've done it, I guarantee we talk about it, that you're still learning and you're seeing different things. And like luck still has to fall a little bit in your favor in all of this. Now, obviously the things that we do and the time we spend put those percentages higher, but there's luck involved. I'm going to tell you a story about luck here quick. Last week, Iowa. So, you know, these deer are doing all kinds of crazy things and, you know, just this random movement. And the strategy going in was, okay, sit these food sources and they're going to come there. Well, that wasn't working. So we're like, okay. And just over strategizing, over trying to figure out, okay, what gives us the best chance? Well, last day we're like, okay, we're going to go in and we're going to sit in this. It was a standing bean plot, probably an acre in size. And like, okay, these deer are doing these crazy things. There's not pictures necessarily of a big one here, but like, I don't know, it just felt like the right move. And we went in there 12:45, walking through this super tall grass to get to this elevated blind that's sitting over these standing beans. Sure enough, get halfway there and there's a big buck standing in the food plot in these standing beans, just hammering them. Like it's December 30th and it's colder than hell. And he's just there by himself, mowing. Like, holy smokes, what do we do? So we start going and, you know, he's feeding, so we'd move through this grass and he'd pick his head up and would hunker down and we played that game. And it took us forever to get in there. And we got to the edge of the field, standing right below, is an elevated platform, like 6 feet high with a soft-sided blind on it. Deer is 145 yards away, ranged him. I'm like, man, we could kill this deer on the ground. But it wasn't the right scenario. These beans are tall, right? So like I could just see his body, or I could just see his head and his neck. I could see parts of his body, but it wasn't real good. Wasn't gonna be great footage. Like, okay, we got to get in this blind. So Connor's looking at me. He's like, no way we get in that blind. I'm like, just let's watch the deer. He's super comfortable. Let's go slow. Let's do it. So I climb up there, and it was redneck ghillie blind on top. And to unzip the back, I get in the blind. Now Connor hands up the tripod, hands up the camera. I get him in the blind. This deer's an eye shot. And we get the front windows down. Deer's feeding there perfectly calm. Now you want to talk about luck. Like there's some luck involved here. With him being out there, one, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, just feeding. Two, for us to get in there, see him, like, and get in this blind and all set up. So it's like, okay, well, what do we do? It's about for us too, like getting the footage, telling the experience, like, you don't just want to kill a deer. That's great. I have nothing against anybody that does that, but you know, we try to do something more to bring you some cool stuff. Well, deer's feeding there and I was going to give it like a minute. And all of a sudden deer gets jiggy. Like our wind's good. He doesn't see us, but like there's something wrong. All of a sudden he turns and he goes and he starts going. He runs back in the woods and he stops in the wood line. And walks off. Like, and I'm flabbergasted at this point. So we went from the highest of luck to like the worst of luck. Or I'm thinking like, okay, something happened. Did we get a wind swirl? Like, this is a big deer. And wasn't a minute later after I watched that deer walk off, here comes the neighbor down his fence line, walking his fence line. And the wind was blowing directly from him to the deer. So that's what it was. And then the neighbor didn't like us hunting there, even though we weren't even close to his fence. But anyways, didn't like us hunting there, so he proceeded to walk up and down his fence line the rest of the afternoon. But craziest deal, like, you know, there was a lot of luck there on both sides, you know, and it didn't come together. But like, I look back at an awesome experience. Like for us to get in there and see this deer and slip in and even get in the, like, so cool. I look back at that. That's not a failed hunt. That's a success, man. No, it was
absolutely
awesome.
That's a great point that, you know, we're really trying to get across. It's really about the sport. It's not about, you know, showing off the antlers. I mean, like this year, we didn't have high expectations for this year, and this year's not over yet. But basically, we took two great deer off last year, and they were both target deer. This year, we had only three target deer really left, and one of them's not, you know, a homeboy. The other one was...
One of them hasn't shown up.
Which one you talk? Well, we'll talk about that later. But and then you got another one that wasn't really a homeboy, but he was a homeboy late season in this one area. Well, he came in and took over, so the other one got pushed off. So we're really hunting one deer right now. That's it. And he's smart. I mean, he's not stupid. He's got it figured out. So that's where we're at, you know. So I mean, you got to be realistic. We got three tags. We got.
So we're hunting extremely hard, but low key, which is hard to do.
That is hard to do.
Hunting the edges, but trying to get close enough, but then not trying to bump it and ruin the opportunity.
So let's change that up. What are we going to do now? What's going to be our strategy? We're going to get super aggressive. We got the muzzleloader season is ending on Sunday. So now we're not going to be nearly as worried about someone taking one of these shooters, if you will, or one of these targets. Or as far as that goes, the up-and-comers. We don't want them going away either because we need more target deer to replace the ones that we've taken and so on. So we're going to be way more aggressive to try and get this one deer, the deer that we're chasing, try and get him out of there at 6.5 years old. So that the other target deer will come back, who's lived there his entire life and been the most dominant deer in the area, you know, so that he'll come back and actually some of the other younger deer that we're passing this year will stay home and can be competitive in that area. Now, we're learning about the property. We're learning about the behavior of the deer. We're learning about all these different things. What's going to hold them? You know, early season, what's going to make him be there? What's going to make him be there pre-rut? What's going to make him be there during the rut? What's going to make him be there during the hunting, you know, pressure, rut, all that, late season and super late season? You know, we have to, that's all a strategy. And so you have to look at, and then how are we going to get them? So that's all a strategy. What are we going to do to the land? Where are we going to put the food based on the base, you know, the winds and all that kind of stuff? How are we going to get in and out of those areas based on the vegetation? You can't get in there and sneak up on a bean field unless you got some kind of wall cover or something getting in and out of there, or get into a corridor area from the bedding to the bean field, which is, we can't do that yet because we don't have the timber done. You know, so we're hunting the edge of the field right now because we can't get in there because the woods are too far open. I mean, you can see 500 yards in there sometimes. You know, well, your buddy's deer was seeing him at 50 or 100 yards, you know. So there's just so much to this stuff, and it's such a great challenge. And so my whole... And this is just me. I mean, my whole inspiration now comes from, because it's not about really the hunt anymore to me. I mean, as far as I've done it for so long, I don't have to kill more deer. I mean, do I want to shoot some nice big bucks? Absolutely. But it's all about, really, the whole passion is about helping other people learn through our experiences. And my new passion isn't about growing the biggest antlers that you could possibly get and be in the record books. That's not it at all. What it is, it's all about age right now. There's just something about the age that has taken over my mind of the deer, and it probably has something to do with the experience that JJ had. In fact, I know that that's what really sparked it off, was trying to take out a deer that we wanted out of an area in Wisconsin, and couldn't get him, and he was a junk. We needed to get him out of there. He was big, he was strong, he was a bully. Had to kill him, get him out of there so other deer could come in and take over, and he turned into be the story. He was, you know, once again, we keep talking about Beamer. Not the biggest, baddest deer ever antler-wise, not going to be in the top ranks of any kind of books, but probably the most fulfilling and strategic multi-year scenario that you could possibly have. And the fulfillment, and I didn't even shoot the deer. The fulfillment, I didn't even chase that deer. I don't even hunt that place. But the fulfillment of watching that happen with JJ inspired me to continue that thing, that same thought process and that same strategy on our own land that I do get to hunt. So that's my brain. I'm just eating up with it. Age. And it started out super frustration because the neighbors are shooting them because of, you know, the things in the rut. We had one neighbor, and I'm not going to name any names or nothing because, you know, there's nothing wrong with what they did, but took out five up and comers in the first few years, you know? And so at first I would be angry and upset about it. And then you got to think, and it's like, well, no, you shouldn't be angry or upset about it. Yeah. Maybe you didn't get the opportunity personally. And now it's part of the strategy. So I know these deer are going to get taken. And now I'm at a point, and we are at a point, I shouldn't just say me, that when a neighbor takes a deer, we're just like, well, that's part of the game. We know that's part of the game we're playing now. So that becomes part of the strategy. And for me to wish that someone doesn't shoot a 2.5 or a 3.5-year-old deer, that's extremely selfish. So I kind of caught myself on that one too, you know. So... But anyway, that's the game now that's eating me up, is age. And the whole hunt, the whole strategy, everything about it is about that age. Inches are going to come with that. You know, they're going to be there and they're not going to be there. But if there's an 8.5 that goes 150, or a 5.5 that goes 190, or a 6.5 that goes 190 or 200, it's the same thing. You know what I mean? It's age. I mean, that kind of went on a rant there. Mike's rant, he's drinking coffee today.
Back on the coffee train. No, I think we're all kind of hunting that way. Even, you know, you're chasing deer with Adam right now and kind of looking for that just most mature buck you can find. And it doesn't really matter what's on his head. You guys are passing up some big 4-year-old bucks and 3-year-old bucks. And he passed up some nice deer looking for kind of that next level. So I think everybody's kind of on that same plan. But there's something about when you see that big buck, especially when they get to that 5, 6, 7 or older. Like last week, I did see the the target buck we're after, and I got a little bit of footage of him, and like that was the first good look I had at him.
You've seen him actually, and that's the other thing. We don't see these big deer visually all the time. It's very rare that we actually see them. So he got first eyes on him.
Yeah. So that night, you know, I filmed a nice 3-year-old for a while, and then a good 4-year-old buck came through that we passed quite a bit this year. And then when the big boy stepped out with a couple other 3-year-old bucks, it was like, you know, 3-year-olds look really nice and 4-year-olds look really nice. But then when the moment the big one steps out, you're like, oh man, yeah, that's like different.
You can't mistake them.
Big, dark head and, you know, bunch of mass and body's way big. I mean, frames just the presence of a big deer coming into the field, like a super mature buck. It's just something that's different. So, and we got 4 years of history with him.
Yeah.
So yeah, playing that game, but yeah, late season, kind of circling back to that. I don't love the snow. I know I was talking to somebody a week or so ago, but when Wisconsin gun season was on and, oh, we got all this snow. And I'm like, I don't really like the snow. Like, I can't access a lot of my stands because the deer just.
But you can see good.
I mean, you can see them for 100, 200 yards away, but then they can see you. So there's, it's kind of a give take. But on the other hand, the snow forces their hand into, you know, picking certain spots. So it's all part of the game. It's a big chess match. That's what we're doing. It's just a big, constant chess match and just trying to take them out.
We got so many years left of this whole strategy game and, you know, setting up the property, figuring out food plots, getting access, managing the age of the deer. And that's the other thing, back to that age of the deer. If I don't fill a tag this year, if none of us three, I mean, we're realistic. We know all three of us are not going to fill our Minnesota tag. That's not happening, you know. But if one of us gets that one target deer that we have a chance at, that would be like just the most awesome thing. We'd really love to see Chris get one off the property. I mean, that would really be a great thing. But the other big fulfillment of this year, seeing the survival of some beautiful deer. And that's like a super win too. So even if you don't fill your tag, you have a winning season or you have a fulfilling season based on your experiences and your, you know, knowing that, oh, they made it, you know, because of what we, you know, some of the things that we did help that happen, you know.
Let's talk about the strategy of this one that you're trying to kill. So, you know, you guys have standing beans there. There's a pile of deer coming out there. I think it's even going to get better now that we have this snow and cold. You've obviously seen him out there, right? You filmed him the other day. You know, based on your setup, this isn't like a slam dunk thing though. Again, there's so many variables that go into this and it's tough. So you tell me, the way that I understand is most of those deer, they're feeding at a distance, you know, but the easy thing to say is, and I don't know how far, like when you saw him, how far was he from where you were?
I think
sitting?
He was probably, I'd guess 80 yards when he was feeding out there the rest of the night.
Yeah. And that's where most of the deer fed.
Pretty much, yep.
But now let me change that.
I mean, some get close. It's just they're all over.
Because it was a week later that I was out there filming when we had all the deer out. They've kind of eaten a good chunk of that area up. So now we had them at, before they're at like 140 to 80, or 160 to 80, kind of what Jay did on that side of the field from where the blind is. Basically, we have to have it there because of the wind. We had them more at about 90, all the way up to 15 yards walking right by the blind and 30, 35 yard shots for Chris, yep. You know, that he just didn't show up.
Yeah. And that's awesome. And yeah, I was just curious on what because the easy thing to do, like I could see somebody going, man, all the deer are feeding right out there in the middle. We need to move, need to get more aggressive, need to, but it's interesting. I really like the thought of, you know, eating out some of those areas too. Like yep. If they're hammering it that hard, then, you know, they're shifting some in the food. And that's a hard thing when you have, my point is and that you have to be careful. I think late season like this, everybody gets the idea, oh, I'm going to leave some crops. I think that you have to really, that's a strategy in itself and where you leave those crops and thinking about what your primary winds are. And then how you're going to set it up so that you can hunt it. You guys set it up so, like, you have bulletproof access there for the most part. You know, you get a south wind, like, you're golden. And it's easy to slip out of there, too, with probably deer pretty close. You know, you can get out of there without having to blow a bunch of deer out of the field. When it comes down to it, this late season, it's really difficult. If you go in there and you don't shoot your target, then you got to get out. And that's super hard with all these deer in concentrated areas. I can tell you, we messed up this year And it wasn't really our fault. One of the guys that I leased this ground with, he talked to the farmer when he was out there picking beans and wanted him to leave a certain section. And the farmer didn't really want to do that. But he said, okay, well, I'm going to leave you one headrow width. I'll leave you an acre, but it's going to be one headrow. And now we have this strip of beans that's along this wood edge. And like, that's going to be the play here coming up. And I know this 6.5-year-old deer is coming in there, but I don't know. North wind is not great. South wind is not great. Like, you gotta, so now, you know, we're trying to bounce around and say, okay, how do we get in there with the wind? What's the right wind? Because I can't look at it and tell you what the right wind is. But that's what I'm saying is for future, be careful and really strategize where you leave those crops. Cause that can make or break you.
I'm guessing his bed is really close to that too. Right. So that's another thing. How are you going to get in there without bumping him?
Right. I think the only thing, like, so the stand that I'd love for him to shoot this deer out of, or maybe have an opportunity, is the stand I actually shot my buck out of earlier in the year. North wind, which is the wind that I hunted it with, works because it's blowing away from the deer where they're bedded, and it blows straight out into this field. The problem with that is, I think with the amount of deer that are coming out in this field now, there's going to be deer out there, and north wind's going to blow to them before that buck gets there. I know it. South wind is good in theory because the wind's blowing completely away from the food, but it's blowing kind of where they're coming from. Now, there's a big drop off behind us, so I think our wind blows over those deer that are real close, but it comes back up on the other side. If they're bedded on the other ridge, you know, your wind could blow to them, you know, before they even get out of their bed. So that's the hard thing, you know. I think we're going to be really calculated. Just our strategy is be really calculated, pick the right day, go in there with probably a southeast wind and really phase up, take our time. And, you know,
yeah, like here's the deal on that. My thought, and this is based on my experience with the food plot sit with all the deer and the turkey, is we went, it was like a four mile an hour wind, four to six, you know, three to five, something like that. So that's not much because we're on the ground. Now compile that with being in an enclosed blind. We were in the redneck gilly. And so now all those odors are filling that thing, right? And you don't have full airflow through it either because you're only opening a certain side of those windows, but you are getting some airflow through there. So we knew it was like a tough deal because you do get exposed. I mean, we can get in there, but in winter you're exposed when you go over this knob. They can't see you down in the actual field we're hunting, but they're coming from all areas. So going in and out of there, there's deer on the outside of the destination that you're gonna bump them. You know, you may not bump the ones down in there, but you're gonna bump the other ones. Anyway, long story short, we got super phased up, everything, fresh wash and air out and this and that. And that phase gum, I'm telling you, man. Oh, did I speak too soon on that? Anyway, so the mouth strategy that we're using and, you know, researching, if you will, I can't believe them deer didn't pick up on us. Now, some of them kind of are looking at the blind. So obviously they've seen us get in and out of that blind before. It's not bumping them out of the field, but there's like two of them that were like always looking at the blind. Is there somebody in there today? Is there not somebody in there today? But 2 out of 30 is not bad. And then we had deer walk right next to the blind and it come in behind us with the wind in their favor, walk 15 yards from the blind, had other deer walk along to our west and circle behind the blind, and not one deer blew that night. Not one deer blew. So that tells me coming into late season and I get a chance, if I phase up and I'm doing my thing, if I know I got a little heavier wind, like about a 10 or a 12, sometimes, I pretty much gave Little Splitter the win last year when I shot him. He was definitely going to come out into my wind cone, directly under my wind cone. But I had that 12 to 15 mile an hour wind. So because he was lower, it was blowing over and they weren't picking up on me. All the does came out before all that. You know, that was kind of a last toward the end of the night when I shot him. but no deer busted me that day because it was getting over top and my scent control was so good using the phasing. So think about that. If you're going to dive in, if you're going to take that chance, do it correctly. Don't go in there with a 2-3 mile an hour wind where it's snow, crunch, 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 crunch. The other thing is I went in there at like 11 o'clock, you know, for a night hunt. You got to get in there super early and you got to put your time in because if you go in there at like, it gets dark here at what, 5 o'clock now as shooting hours are done. You go traipsing in there at 2:30, 3 o'clock, well, shame on you. You know, you can't do that, especially when you're that exposed. It's that loud with the snow, this and that. You know, so there's just so much that you can do. You can get aggressive now, but do it smart. You might get away with it. We did.
Yeah, a couple things there. Yeah, you got to get in early. Like when I hunted that field about a week ago, when I snuck up in the back of the blind, it's, you know, there are areas you can be exposed when you're walking in, but when you get to the blind in the field, it's kind of this low bowl out in front of you. There was already, you know, two does and a nice 3-year-old new buck that I'd never seen before already eating, and it was about, you know, 12:30, 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in the early, kind of like your Iowa story. And then another thing, you know, you're mentioning how you got to hunt certain winds for that spot. And then you got to kind of think back, like, what does the wind really mean? Because this time of the year, you know, north wind means that's that typically the big cold front, which is the front you want to hunt.
And the barometer going up.
But if you need a south wind for your spot, like kind of like what we have, and then you're looking for that first south wind after the north. So at least you can still get in on some of that activity, you know. So you might get a big cold front, deer hit it. You know, hit the food hard for a couple of days. You get the first south, then we can jump into our spot.
Or you can get a feeding. Super cold from the north, and it shuts them down. And then the first south warm, it they just get up and just gorge then, too. That's how you killed.
I love the first south. That's what I was hunting that the day the other week when all the deer came out and I saw the shooter. And that's actually tomorrow will be that day here after the snow today. We get a south that kicks back in. And then another point, just thinking, you guys were talking for a while there, the transition between bed and food is really shrinking now. So when you're planning this type of situation, you know, the A to C, we'll call A bed, C food, B transition, you know, that's really shrinking. So when you're hunting that bean field that's stretched out across a long section of timber, your A to C is like super short, I'm guessing. And to be able to get to the B on that is like almost impossible. Oof.
It makes it tough.
So in some cases, it might be better to plan late season food and try to stretch it out a ways so you can maybe get into a little bit of a pinch or a tree line or something, you know, between a big bedding. We'll have to think about that next year.
Yeah, that's actually a good call.
Try to lengthen that out a little bit because they're trying to condense it. They're trying to save energy, bed close, then eat and go back to bed. They're not doing the big move that we were seeing early to where, you know, they would come out, hit a big field, you'd be hunting that night. You can let them feed for a while if it's, you know, you lose your light, you let them feed for a while, they'll probably move off. Now it's like they're just going to sit out there all night. Snow cover doesn't allow you to get out very easily, and they're only going to bed 100, 200 yards away anyway.
See,
so it's
the thing
just
of it is
condensed movement.
Our infrastructure is not set up for anything in the woods yet either because now we're going to get that timbered out right away. And so now we're going to have bedding where they're not going to be able to see us because there's going to be so much thickness. And we're going to be creating these lines of entry and these trails and stuff like that where we can slide into the timber in and out and hit the pinch points so they could be bedding fairly close by and we should be able to slide into that timber instead of hunting just the food and we could start hunting pinch points along with hunting the food. So that's where your wind strategies can, you know, maybe work to your advantage too. So, and we create these pinch points. You know, we don't just say, oh, yeah, well, there's a pinch point over there. No, we're going to create the pinch point like we did down below. We cut out a green field in the middle of a cornfield. So we knew transition coming from the timber bed, going into the green, going into the high-carb food. We knew that that transition would last throughout the season, and that proved itself out on the other sit I told you about with the young generations of deer. So they're still hitting the mid-season food on their way to the late-season food, so it created a pinch point just from that strategy. So we won't have to hunt the cornfield or the corner bean field in IMAX anymore. If we get a good system in the timber, we should be able to hunt some pinch points from where we're creating the bedding, where we know they're going to want to bed, and get into areas where it's going to take them to the food too. So that'll add a whole nother dynamic to it all.
Yeah, and kind of part of the final push that we, you know, we are going to be aggressive is because we have this logging going on in January. So right after the season, we're going to blow this place up anyway. We're hopeful that if we can do it early enough, all the browse we're going to lay on the ground by logging, leaving all the tops, we'll still have this grain. The deer can kind of filter back in and drop some antlers for us. So we'll see if it's a make or break. But we're going to be aggressive because when the season's over, I mean, we're going to go in there and get pretty heavy with equipment and
yeah, but they got the whole other side of the property for a safety zone for the browse and whatnot too. So, and some food over there. So hopefully, you know, it doesn't really matter because you're going a whole nother year cycle.
So maybe we'll go through here and we'll each pick our top three food sources to hunt for the final push. Brian, you can go first.
Yeah, I mean, I think a clear one for me is standing beans. I think if we get cold weather and there's snow on the ground, like there is nothing better than standing beans. Standing corn can be good too. I deer will also go to standing corn. You know, your any standing grain that you have when you have snow and cold is really good. Number three, you know, that's an interesting one. You could look at greens, because you know, deer will still hit those greens when it's late and it's cold. If you don't have any of those though, I will say I have seen, deer go to fields, you know, that are cut beans or cut corn. And maybe there's, you know, there's still a little food left over from the farmer in there, you know, through harvest. So you're not out of the cards there. I have seen, you know, standing bean fields. I know Andrew's hunting one right now, and he's got some good deer coming to it. And he did late season last year, too. It's a completely cut bean field. So I would say top two for sure. Beans being one, corn, and then, you know, greens are good. I haven't had as much experience hunting over greens when it's super cold, just because I rely on those top two a lot, but I have heard guys having success on those cut bean fields too, you know, deer trying to paw that last little bit in there if there's no other food sources around.
Yeah, pretty simple. I think I'm in agreement for the most part, and it really just depends on how this snow level for us, you know, is it going to stay? Is it going to go? I mean, if it drops back down, melts off a little bit, I could see a lot of the greens coming back into play. I know we had a nice test plot up on what we call football field past couple weeks when that first snow melted off, like the deer were just hammering that top southern exposure, like little green knob. Seen them do that too on some of the, you know, pasture and hay fields and stuff. When they get that area that melts off first, they'll just really hit those hard, maybe even harder than some of the egg when it warms up. So yeah, beans for sure first. Those are going to run out quick though because they get eaten so fast, and they'll transition. Corn is definitely pretty good, but got to pick beans over standing corn. Standing beans over standing corn. And then third is some type of green. Just hard to say with where we're at, which one's going to be the best. I know down south people are still, you know, the green plants, they're still growing plots down there, like way down south. So depending on where you're at, I mean, turnips and brassicas have been on fire too. So that'd be my number three.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all in agreement on the bean thing. And it's because of the nutrition factors, because of the protein, they got to get that muscle mass back on. And that's my opinion on it anyway. But beans, number one. And I guess I'm going to throw a little extra at it. So the reason I would hunt the beans, one is because I think the bucks do need that protein. It's not so much about the does, but I think that you get such a big number of deer that are highly visible in a condensed area. And I think they're eating corn, you know, quite a bit too. So it's not like you shouldn't hunt corn, but I think the beans gets everything condensed. You get a good visual. You get a good idea. You can start to pattern them. And so that's one, you know, more reasons why I like the beans as number one choice. But then you got the corn, especially late season. The corn is a great food source that puts that fat on, which is very helpful. They don't want to overdose on that because then it kind of screws up their metabolism. So if you like overdose on fat and carb and stuff like that, I think it brings their metabolism up a little bit too high in this area to, you know, to survive the winter. But the other thing I like corn about is from a, you can get in and out of those stands easier. You know, they're not seeing you as much. You're not, maybe not getting as much visual. But up here now, I'm looking at, with the snow as a factor, I'm looking at the trails. You know, where are they coming in? You can see where they're coming in. You know, and you can really get a good visual picture of what's happening, you know, in like that cornfield or whatever. So like we put the camera on a cornfield now, it's not even close to getting the pictures that we got last year when it was in that other spot. Have you noticed that? So where are they coming into that corn? You know, that's a big deal too. How can I get in there? I can get in there. If they're coming in on this side of the field, I can slide in because the corn's giving me the cover. I can get up into a tree. You know what I mean? So that's another good strategy for corn. And then I would say, and then once again, look at the trails with the snow. But then I would actually even like to see if I can have a winter water source, which is very, very rare, unless it's like a moving stream, but then you're not really in control of where they actually access that particular part of the stream. But if I could control a water source during the middle of winter, I think that would almost go up there right next to the bean thing, you know, and you could monitor it because you're going to see the trails. You know what I mean? If they find it and they're hitting it and they know it's there and they're going to get consistent with it and it's in a strategic spot, more of an interior timber versus along a creek bed, you know, they're in that interior timber. I think that would be golden. And I still haven't figured out how to do it up here yet.
You know, that's a great point, something that I think I overlooked for sure. But yeah, if you could keep water open, and I know they make some stuff out there. I think Banks makes one. There's some other things, but like little aerators that you could keep water holes open. I think if you have an open water source late season too, I think it'd be killer.
It would be killer, especially if it's in the right spot.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's all great. So, you know, to wrap this thing up, a couple things. You know, one, go do some scouting. Like if you got a tag still in your pocket, like deer are gonna move more than likely if you get good weather, you know, cold weather, snow, especially up here, like deer are gonna move. So if you're like, where should I hunt? Go do a little scouting. Now don't go and blow a bunch of deer out, but you know, I think we're at the point of the year where if I had the question, like I would go try to look at the trails and find out where they're going, do some scouting, you know, and even scout more than you hunt this time of year. Because, you know, some of those times it's hard to get in and out. So, like, go find out, put a game plan together, get a strategy, and go in there and get aggressive and kill one. But final push, if you're out there, good luck. It can be some of the best times to hunt. So, like, these next 2-3 weeks, man, there's going to be a lot of big deer that get shot.
And even if you don't fill your tag, it's, once again, the fulfillment of the season is real. It's all the stuff that you've done. It's all the things you've experienced. So, the final push is... You know, it's not a bad thing that you're not filling a tag either.
Yeah, and there's no better time to get a camera up on a really heavy trail than when you got deep snow. Put a reveal on that, head into a good food source, and you're going to get pretty much all the deer on that camera too.
Well, good luck out there in the final push. Thanks for tuning in. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe. Thanks for listening. If you haven't done so already, make sure you download the free Deer Society app. It's free on the iTunes Store, Google Play. Lots of good information on there. Still some hunt breakdowns that are rolling out on there, so make sure to check those out. Thanks for tuning in. Good luck out there on the final push.
All our sponsors here at Deer Society are partners whose equipment we know we can trust are going to make you more successful and have a better experience in the field. Products like Illusion Systems, maker of the Black Rack, the Extinguisher, and the Phase Body Odor System. Tacticam, Reveal Cell Cameras, 10-Point Crossbows, Onyx Maps, Osseo Gear, Huiman, and Big Frig.